Water is, without question, our most precious resource. When it comes to the city of Tucson's management of it, someone must take on the important role of making sure everything they do is legal and above board. From water service area policy to water infrastructure incentives to water sharing agreements, someone must make sure that all is in good legal order. Christopher Avery is that person. He's going to share with us Tucson water resource positions regarding the state's cap supply, lower basin agreements, and shortage threats. He will also talk us through how shortage cuts could impact Tucson and what the legal implications are. Stay with us to learn from someone who has legacy knowledge and experience that he will share because he has played a role in executing quite a few things that impact our lives every day. Get ready for the inside scoop. Hi, everybody. I'm Gina Murphy-Darling, and we are Down to Earth. Thank you for being a part of our world. And as always, at the top of each show, we give a shout-out to the sponsor of the show and a valued partner of Mrs. Green's World, whoever that may be. And in this case, it's Tucson Water. Tucson Water delivers safe, clean, and high-quality water that meets state and federal regulations. This utility also voluntarily monitors the water system for hundreds of contaminants that are not regulated by federal, state, or local governments, and we are proud to have them as our partner. Now, please join me in welcoming Chris Avery, City Attorney. It really is great to have you with us, and I have lots of questions.
Great, let's go.
Yeah, let's go. So, inside scoop. I think it's safe to say that the average citizen, including people like me, give very little thought to what I call water policy. It's not something I go around thinking about each and every day, and I don't think most people do. But I do have a consciousness about water use and not wasting it. And I know that having unlimited access to clean water, I had to say this on the show, is a privilege that millions of people in the world don't have. And I know that Tucson Water must have fairly comprehensive policy, given what I do know about the department and your practices. So here's the question. What goes into crafting an actual water service area policy? There have to be so many moving parts, and you have plenty of time to answer. What do you have to look at for a water service, water area service policy?
Well, the first thing we have to look at for the city of Tucson is what does the state require us to do? Because that's the minimum standard. And in our case, Tucson Water is located within the Tucson Active Management Area, which means we're subject to the Arizona Groundwater Management Act. And there are a variety of ways that that piece of legislation affects Tucson and Tucson Water. But the most important way it affects us is that the Active Management the Active Management Area and the Groundwater Management Act require us to show to the state regulators that we have a 100-year assured supply of water at any given moment. And that 100-year assured water supply is effectively doled out in 10-year increments. But every 10 years, Tucson Water has to demonstrate to the Arizona Department of Water Resources that we have sufficient 100-year supplies on hand to meet the needs of our current customers, plus any expected growth that will take place within the service area or the area where Tucson Water provides service during the next decade. So that's the most important component of formulating water service policy, is essentially making sure that you can meet the requirements of the Groundwater Management Act and the Assured Water Supply rules. On top of that, though, Tucson Water has an interesting mixture of resources and portfolios and service areas and policies that go into this larger matrix that you call water policy. And so there are a wide variety of those policies that are set by the mayor and council and essentially function as legal requirements that apply to the Department of Tucson Water. And then there are a lot of discretionary policies that Tucson Water undertakes, all in an effort in general to ensure that we have long-term, safe, and healthy water supplies to deliver to customers today, for the next 10 years, and into the foreseeable future of the city of Tucson.
And Chris, it begs the question, in these times of extreme weather that we're seeing every day, there's flooding, and there's tornadoes, and there's hurricanes, and there's extreme drought, and there's fire. When you probably in, you know, in my lifetime, there was some measurable degree of predictability because there were patterns. Now, everything to me has gone wild, crazy. How do you do in the looking glass for 10 years, especially in the desert Southwest? I mean, is it just based on the best information that you have with what you can do? And how do you predict how many people are going to be here? You know, I mean, this is a lot of things to look at to say, oh, yes, we'll have 10 years worth given the crazy times.
Well, the good thing is that you're required to do it every 10 years. And so
that's not too far.
You can make your best guesses about what Tucson is going to look like 100 years from now as part of an assured water supply application. But, you know, 10 years gives you the ability to see whether you got things right a decade ago or wrong.
Right.
So there's some benefit to that. And I will say that as a department, we were certainly, like a lot of other people in this country, caught by surprise with the economic downturn that took place in 2008. And that caused...
Everybody got impacted.
I will say that not necessarily that changed the patterns of consumption for Tucson Water customers, because those patterns had been starting probably a decade earlier than that, but they were certainly exposed some of the assumptions that we've been making for a long time that had been masked by that rampant growth that took place prior to the collapse of the mortgage market, were exposed in 2008 when we started to see not only dramatically declining per capita water use, which had started maybe several years earlier, but also with the foreclosures and houses that were left abandoned, et cetera, that we saw at that point dramatic decreases in actual water usage. And so one of the things that's happened in the city of Tucson and also in a lot of other water providers in the West and our friends and partners in Town of Moran and Oro Valley as well, is that we've seen dramatic declines not only in per capita water usage, but also in absolute water usage since 2007, 2008. And so we're in a position now where Tucson Water serves as much potable water to its customers today in 2018 as we served to customers in the mid-80s.
That's like blows my mind. Yeah, actually does blow my mind.
So Tucson Water customers have essentially absorbed 30 years of growth in the system through conservation.
Wow.
That makes the job of planning things for the future a lot more simple, and it makes complying with those legal requirements a lot easier. So,
and there were really great education campaigns by Tucson Water, mm-hmm. and Water Use It Wisely, those messages. And what's really affirming to me is to know that people really listened, because water is our most precious resource and we live in the desert. That's a wonderful statistic. So when all of this comes together, what is your job? Is your job to look at all of these very comprehensive documents to make sure they're in compliance with what the state regulators want?
Sure, in part. Generally, I also spend a lot of time and effort trying to put agreements together so that almost all water in the Western United States is allocated, controlled, apportioned by contract. So whether it's a subcontract between the United States of America, the Central Arizona Water Conservation District, and the City of Tucson for Tucson Central Arizona Project Supply, which is 145,000 acre feet of water, or whether it's a contract between Tucson Water and a particular developer for service at five lots or even one lot worth of water service, which is maybe a third of an acre foot of water per year. Water moves around by contract. And so, although I thought I was going to be a water lawyer, I essentially am in many ways a contract lawyer. And that's where a lot of the legal work goes in both maintaining and creating and fine-tuning these legal relationships between water providers, water rights holders, future customers, and so there's a wide variety of different agreements out there, but it all comes down essentially, it eventually comes out in an agreement that's approved by the mayor and council, or approved by the director of Tucson Water, and then you comply with that agreement as best you can and keep going.
So let's talk about CAP water, because there's a lot of what you call, I love that you said about headlines. Be careful, everybody, when you're reading the headlines,
yes,
because sometimes even what the headlines say is not really what the article is about. It's used to just capture your attention and grab you. And when you read deeper, it's like, oh, well, that's really not what it should have been called. But talk about CAP water, because I think there's a lot of misunderstanding about it. And when you say, like, I want to jump to the end of this, when you say there's agreements, well, the water comes downhill. So I know it's coming down here. Tell us about CAP water, and then what happens if there isn't any water coming downstream? What kind of, look into the future, but tell us about CAP water and how it really dictates our present and our future.
Well, sure, and I'll try to keep that order straight. Let's talk about CAP water first, and then let's talk about local water resources second. The most important resource that Tucson Water has, or at least the most important renewable water source supply that Tucson Water has, is Central Arizona Project water, and that's water that's diverted from the Colorado River. It is part of Arizona's allocation of water from the Colorado River, and it's delivered through the Central Arizona Project Canal to the city of Tucson. The amount of that allocation is 144,191 acre feet.
And, that's right at the tip of your tongue.
I did a lot of work to get the extra 19 acre feet that make 144,191.
I love it. You were looking at those details.
But anyway, that's the most important renewable water resource that we have. And it's an interesting position because Arizona has equal rights in terms of allocation with the other, what are called lower basin states, Nevada, California, and Arizona. But when Arizona won the Supreme Court case in 1963 that established Arizona's rights to water, the California delegation made sure 5 years later that when Arizona obtained the funding to build the Central Arizona Project, it took a subordinate position to California and to some extent to Nevada with respect to the priority of those rights. Now, about half of the allocation of Arizona's water is equal in priority to California, but the Central Arizona Project water is lower priority than, say, water deliveries to California. And so if there's a shortage on the Colorado River, Arizona Central Arizona Project supplies are essentially the first on the chopping block. Within Central Arizona Project allocations, however, Tucson's allocation of 144,191 acre feet is the highest priority water amongst that Central Arizona Project water supply. So in terms of a shortage on the Colorado, Tucson's water supply isn't affected until that shortage starts to cut substantially into the amount of Central Arizona Project water that's available for delivery. And we think that even if a shortage were to be declared on the Colorado River, that that shortage would not have the effect of essentially wiping out Tucson's water Central Arizona Project allocation, but it might result in some diminished deliveries at various points in time over the years. One of the things that I wanted to point out and refer back to was based on your earlier question about how variable things are today. And you don't have to be a believer in climate change to look at the past historical record on the Colorado River and realize that that river, even without climate change, was always dramatically variable. And it's my own opinion that the climate change will only make that variability more severe or more marked. But even, let's say we adopt the assumption of some people in the United States that there is no such thing as climate change, the Colorado River is still an incredibly variable water supply, and so we have to be able to deal with that variation. The way we deal with that variation is Tucson's local water supply, and I don't think it's a matter of widespread knowledge about how valuable and how important Tucson Water's regional aquifers are. Tucson happens to sit in an incredibly productive aquifer that's formed by the intersection of the Catalinas, the Rincons, and the Santa Rita Mountains. there's a lot of alluvium in the Tucson Basin. It's generally very clean, and it has high productivity for water supply. There's also a very productive and clean aquifer in Avra Valley. And so in the event that something were to go wrong on the Colorado River, or in the event that there would be a few years of dramatic shortage on the Colorado River, Tucson water is in a good position because we've stored a lot of Colorado River in the water in those aquifers, and we have substantial legal rights to pump groundwater from within those aquifers. So, for example, we were able to recently do a deal with the city of Phoenix where they store water in Tucson.
Right. And then, I was going to ask you about that. Yes, that's a good deal.
And I can talk about that at some point. But the reason we're able to do that deal is because Phoenix is very dependent on having water in the intakes of their water treatment plants. They need water to come down the Central Arizona Project Canal. Tucson is in a somewhat different position in that we can thrive without water coming down the Central Arizona Project Canal in any given year, as long as we're able to make it up later. And that was that gave us the ability to do an agreement with the city of Phoenix that benefits us both. So we've got a highly variable renewable water supply that's very important, but in many ways we're able to backstop that with local water supplies from our aquifer and from wastewater that we can reuse and put both treat and store in productive ways.
And if you spend any time with anyone in a position of knowledge with the City of Tucson Water Department, and I've spent a lot because of our partnership, they're on top of so much. And even when I interviewed Tim, Tommy, or the director a couple of weeks ago, even his thought leadership, his vision, and what he's doing in terms of partnering with places, people from around, organizations from around the world about technology and all of those things, it makes me feel confident even living in the desert Southwest, because I don't want to live in fear. But water is, I mean, I interview a lot of people from all over the world. And, you know, I interviewed someone yesterday that having a well in the village is life-changing. Some people have to walk 10 miles for their water, and most of us don't think about it. I do now. Ever since I started this role as an environmental educator, I'm aware of every drop of water that we use, and so is our whole family. But it's I'm not the only one. When you say that about how we're at the same point of usage that we were, did you say 10 years ago?
30 years ago.
Yeah. I mean, we're really doing something right. And of course, you know, I'm a lover of Tucson too. Tell me what, I don't understand what a water sharing agreement is, and some of the notes that I got to review, one with Phoenix and one with Sierra Nevada Water Authority. What's a water sharing agreement? Is it more stuff you have to look at to make sure it's all legal?
Yeah, sure. Basically, what we've done is Tucson Water has essentially two different well fields. So we have the original well field that served Tucson Water customers up until the time that the Central Arizona Project water was delivered. And then we essentially replicated that well field in capacity with much fewer but much higher capacity wells out in Avra Valley. So because of our declining demand and because we've essentially built two well fields in Tucson, we have the ability to pump about twice as much water as our customers use in any given year. In the Phoenix area, because they don't live on quite as productive an aquifer, although they do have the Salt River, which is itself a pretty nice deal. Pretty important water resource. They only the city of Phoenix has the ability to pump about 3 to 4% of its annual water use in any given year. So we've got lots of extra well fields in Tucson. Phoenix does not. That made it sort of natural to look at an agreement where Phoenix stored water that's in excess of the amount they need to deliver to their customers in Tucson. And then we agree that instead of taking delivery of Central Arizona Project water that will flow past Phoenix anyway, that in a year when there's a shortage, we deliver our water to Phoenix. That water flows into City of Phoenix area treatment plants, and we pump the water that Phoenix has already stored here. So we were able to do that by using some of the excess capacity that developed in our system as our customers. You know, we built facilities to serve what we thought our customers would be using today, but they use a lot less. So we've got some excess capacity in our system. if you want to think about it as a metaphor, we have more seats on the bus than we thought we would.
Wow.
And we have basically more buses than we thought we would have. And so we're able to do a productive agreement with Phoenix where they store water here. And in return, we agree that we'll deliver water to them and down the road. So that's how that agreement works. They pay us. They store water here and deliver it. They also pay us about $50 an acre foot, essentially as a cost for the capital that Tucson Water ratepayers have already invested. So it works out for both of us. We get to put a resource to work that would otherwise be idle, and they don't have to build well fields to recharge projects to store their water. They can take advantage of the well fields and recharge projects that we've already built here.
Yeah, everybody wins. And it's really nice to hear about great partnerships with Phoenix, because all we really ever talk about is the Wildcats versus the Sun Devils.
Yes.
So it's like, yeah, there's a really good working partnership. What about, I'm very interested in Southern Nevada Water Authority. What are you doing with them? Because does that include Las Vegas? Because that's in the news a lot.
Yes, it does. The Southern Nevada Water Authority essentially delivers water to the entire Las Vegas metropolitan area, primarily the city of Las Vegas. But several years ago, when there was slightly more water available for Nevada than they needed at the time, they entered into an interstate agreement with Arizona to store Nevada water here in Arizona. So we recently reached an agreement with the Central Arizona Water Conservation District that some of the water that Nevada had stored down in the Tucson area would be delivered to us. And in response, we will agree to leave water in Lake Mead, essentially, and not order that water for delivery through the Central Arizona Project to Tucson. Nevada can take that water out of Lake Mead and deliver it to itself right from Lake Mead. And it's essentially the same model as the Tucson-Phoenix agreement, except you have an intrastate agreement between, essentially, our agreement isn't with Nevada. Our agreement is with the Central Arizona Project. Central Arizona Project has its agreement with Nevada.
Got it.
But in the same way, you can move water. It's a way to essentially move water between states. You can also move water between cities. And there are a variety of different ways to do that. All of those methods involve a contract.
Yeah, and there you are, dotting the I's and crossing the T's. Oh my gosh, talk about details. And the other thing is, when you're saying that, and I just know enough to be dangerous about when you're doing something like that, when they're taking it from Lake Mead, there's a lot of energy use in transporting water, so it cuts down so much on that energy consumption as well. It's a really good overall contribution to the planet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, one of the things is, and I don't know if you've had a chance to talk with your listeners about this, but, you know, for the first three decades of its existence, the Central Arizona Project that delivers all of our CAP allocation to Tucson was powered by the Navajo Generating Station, and it was coal-fired power.
Right.
And as recently as a decade ago, it was critically important for Central Arizona Project to keep that power plant operational and running. And recent years, there's been such dramatic changes in the energy market, both from solar and from natural gas, that the older coal-fired power plants are more expensive. And so the Navajo Generating Station will be, it looks like most of the efforts to keep that plant running have now failed. The Navajo Generating Station will be taken offline shortly, and the water that's delivered to Tucson in the near-term future, at least, will be generated from a mixture of natural gas, newer natural gas plants, and solar energy from a lot of it coming from California, where there's some excess production of solar electricity during times that make it easy for Arizona to pump the water.
And the whole discussion about the economic impact that has is a story for another day. But in terms of overall survival of the planet, I mean, the United Nations report that came out a couple of weeks ago saying, basically, it was pretty stark. And it said, if we have about 12 years left to kind of start steering the ship in a different way, or we're going to see dramatic impacts all over the planet. And we're seeing a lot of dramatic impacts. I just got back from a national conference in San Rafael called Bioneers, and some leading scientists from around the world. And they're not alarmists. They're just saying, we're scientists. We want you to know, here's what's going on. And they show you these charts and they show you increases. And they say, one scientist at this conference said that the North Pole, they think by next summer the ice will all be melted. I mean, that's how, it doesn't matter if people think it's man-caused or not. It is happening.
Yes.
And we better pay attention.
Well, if you've ever reached in your fridge and grabbed a gallon of milk with your arm extended, you know water is heavy.
And,
it takes a lot of energy to, especially in a case like Tucson, where the water that we deliver to our customers is not fed by gravity. It takes a lot of energy to deliver water, and so it's very important for long-term water supply in Tucson to not only be, to not only have a long-term water supply, but also have a long-term source of energy to deliver that water to our customers.
Yeah, they go hand in hand.
They
and
do.
It's really good news for me to hear that it's going to be powered by natural gas and solar. We all win. It's really all win. And the other discussion about the social justice implications is not one we can take on today. What about water infrastructure incentive? Can you explain that to me? And I was trying to, when I was preparing for the show, was there any controversy around that, or is it just really a good thing, the water infrastructure incentive?
Well, the water infrastructure incentive is a way for the mayor and council to try to attract good economic development to the city of Tucson.
So bring companies in.
Yeah, and so essentially, because of the gift clause in the Arizona State Constitution, and we can have a long-term discussion about the Goldwater Institute or not, but because of the gift clause in the Arizona Constitution, cities are limited in the ways that they can, cities in Arizona are limited in the ways that they can attract economic development in ways that cities in other states may not be. You just can't simply hand taxpayer money to a private business for no return. So what the water infrastructure incentive does is a direction by the mayor and council to try to pay the cost of the public infrastructure that is necessary to serve these companies when they build a new building or a new structure, a new factory, or a new plant. And in that case, what the water infrastructure incentive does is pay for the cost of constructing the water infrastructure. That's a public benefit.
Got it.
That is used to not to connect, say, not only to that particular piece of economic development, but also perhaps to an associated multitude of plants or factories that may locate in the same area.
So okay.
That's simply all the water infrastructure incentive
okay.
is.
Okay, so that's, I get it. I really get it. And I just, sometimes things seem a little bit more complicated than they should. And you know, the other thing, and this is crazy that I'm even going to say this on the air, but I'm crazy, so it's okay. This is why I don't worry about it. There are things that I'm really concerned about for the future, my future, and I never thought it would be, I thought it would be my grandchildren. But being involved with climate scientists on a regular basis, there are things I'm really concerned about, like we're a food desert and on and on. But in terms of water, when I hear people from your department and other places around the world, we're always going to have wastewater, and they're treating it so that I might feel better drinking that once it's been purified than what's going on. So I think there will be a supply, and I know that's another, energy intensive, but I don't know
how many people that are listening to this understand how much of the water in Tucson that's delivered in the Tucson area already is recycled wastewater. Tucson Water has operated a reclaim system since the early 1980s. Most of the customers on that system are golf courses and large parks, but also schools.
Thank goodness.
And
yeah.
Some smaller scale residential customers. But roughly, I don't do really sophisticated math.
You're too busy looking at those complicated contracts.
Roughly right now, 10% of the water that Tucson Water delivers in the Tucson area is already reclaimed water. And we expect will continue to be an important resource, not only for reuse in the reclaim system, but also in the case where you can recharge it in the aquifer. There's some biological processes that take place there that improve the quality of the wastewater. And then you can either deliver it for a non-potable use somewhere down the road, or you can take advantage of new technologies that are getting better and better all the time to deliver that water as potable water if necessary.
So we're almost up. Rumor has it you're an avid runner. We ascertained that before we got on the air, and you are a lover of Tucson. We talked about Blackett's Ridge, and it made me lose my breathing rhythm because I've done Blackett's Ridge and maybe might not ever do it again. It's a rough hiking trail for those of you not in Arizona. It's a very steep hiking trail. I love the phone line. But anyway, do you feel confident we're all going to be fine in terms of water?
Well, sure. I mean, Tucson is surrounded by four incredible mountain ranges, and five if you want to count the Tortolinas as a separate range or part of the Catalinas. But there's a lot of great terrain here. If you like to run trails, there's all kinds of really wonderful opportunities here in Tucson that you can explore, whether it's cold or hot. Those same mountains have collected water for probably millions of years and delivered it into the Tucson Basin, where it forms the backbone of a long-term water supply that's still available to the city. And those mountains produced an incredible aquifer that will support us for a long, long time. So, you know, as you play around in Tucson, as you see water floating down Sabino Creek, you realize very quickly that that's not enough water to sustain the city of Tucson by itself. But the water that's flowed down Sabino Creek for millions of years is a resource that we have available to us for the long term if we manage it wisely, and that makes me feel confident about our future.
It makes me feel confident, too, and we're doing a lot of other things, like planting a lot of trees, and we have watershed management. We have a lot of partners working together to make sure that we're a viable city.
If I were going to live anywhere in the desert...
You'd be in Tucson?
If I were to think of any place in the desert that has a productive future for water, Tucson is the place. It's a great place.
And that's from an attorney. I love that. That gives me a lot of confidence, because you're not just going to throw that around lightly. And Sabino Canyon, I said to someone yesterday, because we've had this wonderful, bountiful rain, that I have to get there soon to see, because once the water starts flowing, it's always beautiful to go there, even in the middle of the summer. But the streams, it'll be taking our shoes off to get across some of those bridges. So this has been delightful, and the time flew. And my last comment is that Mrs. Green's World is all about putting a spotlight on climate change in every way we can, because we do believe it's the biggest threat facing our world today. And shows like this help remind us what our contribution as good stewards of the planet can be when we are conscious about our use of water. And it certainly affirms my belief in Tucson with what Chris said about how we're doing. The planet is getting hotter. The summers are getting longer here in the Southwest, and we can all do our part to continue to help with water conservation. We can all figure out ways to use less water, which helps reduce our carbon footprint. And remember, every little bit helps. And I hope that after you absorb some of the information that Chris shared with us, you'll be inspired to figure out what else you can do to keep Tucson hydrated. October 30th, a wonderful show with a man named Dave Nicewander, CEO of World Bicycle Relief, The Power of the Bicycle. It'll blow your mind. And our Down to Earth show on November 7th, we have people from Savano talking about Trees for You, TEP style, and their aggressive partnership to get more trees planted in Tucson. So, Chris, thank you. It's been wonderful.
No problem. Thank you very much. It's been a pleasure.